Hey, everybody. Welcome to Alumless. Thank you so much for listening. Today is Friday, March 29th, and this is the Organizational Effectiveness in Advancement Edition. I am Ryan Catherwood, and I'm joined by Chris Marshall. On the show, we talk about engagement strategies in advancement. Of course, Alumless is a CMAC production. We're pre-recorded today, but we will be checking the comments section in the LinkedIn event. So please chime in with a question or a comment. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast edition of Alumless to hear our 30-minute bonus segment with today's special guest, Sue Ballard from RPI, and all of our guests each week. We're grateful to have Max and the team at Protopia as our sponsoring partners. Protopia has created a transformational AI-powered technology that matches questions from students or recent graduates with alumni all over the world that are perfectly positioned to answer them. Without requiring alumni to be mentors or participate in a program spread out over months or sign up for any kind of app or platform, Protopia makes scaling introductions simple. Questions get submitted and Protopia's AI does all the work. Protopia can even target stakeholders like young alumni or lapsed donors and provide them with a meaningful volunteer experience. And who isn't trying to scale volunteerism? Visit protopia.co/alumless for more details and to check out the technology that schools like Duke, Denison, Florida State, and the London School of Economics are using to make scaling their alumni networks available to everyone. All right. Well, Chris, it's good to see you. How's it going?
All good here. Good to see you.
Living the dream there in Bethlehem.
LTD is what I always say to my son. He says, how's it going? LTD, living the dream. On nine Zooms today. He shakes his head.
Nine Zooms today?
You're right. Exactly.
I've noticed your schedule has been hard to break through these couple of days. And you had a nice vacation last week with the family in Disney, which was awesome.
It was not restful, but it was awesome.
No, that's definitely true. Disney is without a doubt the least restful vacation known to humanity. But it is definitely a fun time. Did you have a favorite ride that you went on?
I didn't get to go on it because I 2 days I was at a client, but the kids went on Tron, which they tell me was this most spectacular thing ever. My favorite one there's a ride in it's the one where you're on the Banshee flying in Pandora. I think it's called the Flight of the Banshee or something like that. It's a virtual reality kind of thing where you're sitting in this and they make you feel like you're really flying on top of an animal. It's unbelievable. So that was my favorite.
That's definitely was my favorite too. I was at Disney last year spring break, and that one's at the Animal Kingdom. Without doing the lightning lane thing, there was like a 3-hour wait for that particular one, which is just incredible. Like, how does that happen?
But there's nothing in the world I'd wait 3 hours for. So we were in the lightning lane, right?
I feel you on that one. Well, we're going to have a great conversation today with Sue Ballard, our special guest. Kicking off the conversation, I thought, wanted to ask you about your time leading alumni teams. And, we're going to talk with Sue about all sorts of issues when it comes to talent management, organizational effectiveness, employee engagement. So really sort of thinking through some of these issues. We haven't really tackled them on Alumless today, which is one of the things I'm most excited about to chat with Sue. But I wanted to ask you, is there anything looking back, kind of a talent management move that you would have done differently or something you were really proud of? Just kind of thinking back to some of the maneuvers that you made.
Yeah, proud of. I take full credit for recruiting Andrew Gosen to come to Cornell. That was a huge, I think Margaret at Princeton is still mad at me, 15 years later that I stole him from his alma mater and brought him up to Cornell. And he's been there for 12 years now or more. I think it's approaching 14 years and he's thriving and doing great. And he's just a thought leader in our space. And so hiring Andrew is my most proud moment. If I would go back and do it differently, there's a fine line on this one. I would love to get Sue's take on it. I have seen a lot of people come in and make changes too fast. I think I was on the other side. I think I made them too slow. So I would make changes a little faster, but I wouldn't want to be the one who got them to the point where we were changing so fast that it was, scorched earth behind all those changes. So I think accelerating the process when especially having been a consultant for now, we diagnose problems pretty quickly and can see where the issues are. Sometimes they're programmatic, strategic, sometimes it's personnel. And I would move a little quicker on some personnel issues that I didn't move on last time through.
It's always interesting as a consultant when you're trying to diagnose some of the internal challenges that teams are facing. Is it a philosophical problem? Is it a communications challenge? Is it an alignment problem? Like, there's always interesting intricacies, I think, when it comes down to kind of thinking about what makes an organization operate most effectively.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you have a kind of a fundamental philosophy about how to cultivate talent once they're on your team and you're thinking about the growth of that individual or team?
And let me start. Question right before that one is this, is recruiting. Many of our listeners know that I was a collegiate 12 years, and I was an okay coach, but I was a really good recruiter. Getting the right people to match the culture and align with what we want was part of the process of finding the talent to bring to literally the team when I was a coach. Now, you know, in my roles now, I applied that same recruiting philosophy to bring people in who align with what we're trying to get done and look for people to understand what the assigned tasks are, what the implied tasks are, so we can hit the ground running. And once they're there, once we get them to your question, I always said to them, listen, I'm going to micromanage you like crazy for the first 1, 2, 3 months until we get aligned on things. And then I'm going to let you go and do your job. I'm never going to bother you again. Go ahead and run. And my goal, you know, back to Andrew Gosen, my goal was never say no to Andrew. If I could get that done, we would have a successful program. So, you know, hands on at the beginning, get them in the right direction, and then ultimately let them run and do their thing. And my job is to get things out of the way, is to help clear the lane so that they can be successful and with the skills they bring to it. And that's my fundamental philosophy for running teams, leading teams.
Yeah. I always kind of felt the same way during periods of transition. I kind of needed to micromanage a bit more, but ultimately you hope to provide kind of a scaffolding of concepts, ideas, philosophies, and let the folks you've hired be the experts to fill it in around programs and tactics. But let's bring Sue Ballard out because she is the expert in all this. Sue, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Chris, for having me.
Great to see you. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Sue. It's a pleasure.
Sue is the Associate Vice President for Employee Engagement and Advancement Operations at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, RPI. Prior to her role at RPI, Sue had a similar role at Syracuse University, but was also Vice President for Alumni Engagement. So she is fully dialed in to all the things that we talk about here on Alumless. Sue, maybe just to get us started, you might share a little bit with listeners about your role. Often we see Assistant Vice President of Talent Management, but now more and more we're seeing Employee Engagement or People Engagement Officer. What are your thoughts and reactions to that, and especially kind of given your title?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I love this question. I had this question last month at the Talent Management Case Conference that I had an opportunity to serve as faculty. And so, you know, it's my belief that employee engagement is really moving in the direction of the foundation to everything we do, which includes talent management. Now, there are certainly a variety of opinions on this within the industry, people that are far more skilled than I am at this. But I've always focused on any team I've had the opportunity of leading, of really focusing on the employees first. And at the core, that's what employee engagement is all about, really to simplify it. And so with my role today at RPI, it's twofold in that I have an operational component. So I have communications, donor relations, prospect research, data integrity, business intelligence, all rolled into one. And then I have employee engagement, which RPI is going through a major invest to grow model. And so when Matt Termolin engaged me in a conversation to come and work with him again and really ensure that we're focusing on the amazing talent that we're recruiting, that we retain them through an employee engagement model and the culture that we're building. So, you see more and more employee engagement, chief people officer, and I think it really speaks to semantics matter in our work and that focusing on the human being is the most important part of our role in order for that individual to feel supported and productive.
Yeah. Well, as we were sort of thinking about, you know, the topics to tackle in the show, we were thinking a little bit more about key components for successful employee engagement. I know that's a big part of your role. Are there differences in how we should be thinking about organizational effectiveness within advancement versus other types of organizational units? Is there something that sort of differentiates the advancement organization?
You know, I don't think that there are, and here's why. I follow a lot of the Gallup work, and a lot of people that are my peers in the industry follow Gallup. And there's really 5 to 6 main components of employee engagement. And it's about the purpose, the development of someone, the ongoing dialogue, the focusing on their strengths, which we do through Clifton Strengths at RPI, and having a caring manager. In fact, the research and the data shows 70% of someone's engagement comes directly through the relationship that that individual has with the manager. So that's really, really important. And that's not just specific to advancement. That's specific to the workplace culture in general, as Gallup studies that. And so I think it's more about embracing where we're headed within all industries in order to retain talent and be productive through a model of employee engagement, or whatever term you might want to use. Chief people officer, I find, is more common within the corporate side of the house. Talent management, employee engagement is far more higher ed specific. But you do see specifically larger advancement shops always kind of having someone in this role. And I think that speaks to the history of advancement, ensuring that we have the very best fundraisers specifically out there, being able to build a community that we need to build and do the philanthropic work that we have to do.
Are there aspects of the role that you find most challenging?
Yes. Matt loves when I answer this question. He does.
We have a sidebar off script question about working with Matt, but we'll get to that.
He's the best. It's this, and I spoke about this at a presentation a couple months ago. It's that, and this is not just for me and my role, it's for all managers, because it's on all of us, 70%, right? I always go back to that fact, 70%. Yeah, yeah. What happens in our work is that the fire of the day or the hour, and that's not specific to RPI, right? Chris, you're shaking your head. Like, as a swim 100%. Coach, you had it 24/7, right? Yeah, and yeah. I didn't swim for you, but I was a college swimmer, as you know. It's like, I get it, right? So whether it's alumni engagement or stewardship team or anything else I've done in my career, we have the real world operational components that we have to get done that are timely, right? Yep. And what's the first thing to slip through our fingers and to push it off and to say, I'm going to get to that tomorrow. I'm going to do stay interviews next month. I'm going to have that crucial conversation next month, because it's sometimes falls to the bottom of the priority list. And I think that that's the most challenging aspect of this work, that while, in my opinion, it's not brain science in what we're doing, but it's often the first thing that we push to the bottom because of all the other competing priorities, yeah. Especially when you have a role where there's multiple elements pushed into that role.
Yeah. You just described what I would call the epidemic in our industry, frankly, you know, across advancement, the day-to-day tactical work that gets in the way of the broader strategic totally. Work. I often will share that, you know, sometimes having a consultant is the only time you're kind of forced to be strategic, that once a month when that person's in town or you're on a Zoom with them.
Yeah.
Where have you been able to create most impact in your first year at RPI?
So in my first year at RPI, great question. So I started May 1st of 2023, and from about June 15th of 2023 to 2 weeks ago, RPI has hired within our advancement team 26, 27 people. Small so, number.
One every couple of weeks, basically, right?
Yeah. It's a running joke that, like, I've created this onboarding program for advancement, which is my answer. I think it's the most important part right now. What I'm focused on are the onboarding elements and what we're doing. Our HR at RPI has a fantastic onboarding program, I have to say, and what they do and what they provide. And so I saw that and I was like, okay, well, let's make sure that advancement is partnering with that and what that looks like. So we've created a very similar half-day experience with all of the executive leadership team. We just launched this for the first time in January. And we had about 7 new colleagues. We kind of scooped up and rolled them in from October-ish. And, you know, they were to spend 4 hours with every AVP and Matt, our VP, and to hear us talk about the vision and the strategy and where we're going and the culture. That's important. That's really, really important that that leadership team sets that aside. And so that's just one element of onboarding that we've created. But I think for us right now, it's the onboarding elements. It was the number one focus, knowing how quickly we were going to hire and how quickly people were just going to join the ship, which is super exciting. And we're super grateful for the investment that's taking place. So of course, the next piece is we have to produce.
Yeah.
So,
So let's just put a punctuation on that. 4 hours, a half day with the VP, all the AVPs underneath, with all does that happen once a quarter? How often are you going to do that for a whole?
So great question. So I actually, this is one time I did sit back and I was like, okay, what's the strategic approach to this? And honestly, there isn't a strategic approach to this. And here's why. Because we needed it about every month in the fall based on how the numbers.
Right.
And now we've kind of trickled out a little bit. So it's like, I'm not going to take a brand new employee, one person, and be like, here's all the EVPs and the VP and make that person feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Right.
So we're going to play with the cadence a little bit. We'll probably do it again, I would say, late spring, early summer. So like June-ish. And then we'll get it into the flow in the fall again as we go into fiscal year 25 and the numbers that we'll be adding then. I see on average for our size of a shop and where we're heading, 3 to 4 times a year. So quarterly is what it would map out to be.
How big is the overall team? Around 100?
So right now we're hovering right around 62 or 63, but we have plans to get back to where they once were pre-pandemic, like 2012, 2013, 2014. It was 110 at one point at our
I thought it was around 100 people. So you're down.
It was 110. And so I don't want to get over my skis on sharing with numbers, but we're super happy to be at 62. When I started in May, I think it was like 35, 36. So And we've lost about 4 or 5, and then, you know, which happens is you're building and change, Chris, you know, and all those things, and people decide whether they're going to stay or find another opportunity. And so that happens.
Yep. 100%.
So whether it's during the onboarding process or sort of at other points during sort of the employee engagement that you're doing, what advice do you find yourself giving over and over again to individuals when they come to talk with you about their career path or their work that they're doing?
Yeah. So answer it in two different perspectives. One from an onboarding perspective, right? So it's a brand new relationship that I'm building with our new employees. What I talk about and what's the most important piece I think that they want to ask, but they might not always be able to ask is directly because they're brand new, you know, what's the leadership style here? Right. I mean, you get a sense of that in your interview, but once you've really started is when you really, really get a taste of the leadership and the culture. And so, and I'm very transparent and honest, obviously, having worked with Matt, you know, it's my opinion that he is one of the best in the industry, 35 plus years. Right. And so, and he sets the tone for the culture and what we're trying to do. He has high goals and he pushes hard and he pushes fast, which is important. But it's also a very supportive culture, and that comes from his leadership, as well as our president, President Schmidt. So that's from the onboarding perspective. I find myself talking about that a lot. And then the other side of that is someone who's been in their work and they're just kind of, where am I going? What am I doing? What's next for me? And that conversation is a very honest conversation. And sometimes it's about finding out what can we help that person grow within skill sets? What's that professional development plan for that individual? That doesn't necessarily mean it's a title change or a pay increase, right? It means what's the professional development plan. And other times, and some people don't always love when I say this, but sometimes I'm honest to a fault. You do have to look elsewhere to grow your career. You have to look at other opportunities at times to figure out how that adds to your skill set, how that diversifies your skill set, and what you're learning when you leave a place. Because there is such a growth that takes place through a transition when you're leaving a place of comfort. I was very comfortable at Syracuse, very, very comfortable.
Yep.
In a good, beautiful way.
Yeah, I was the same at Lehigh. And the most best thing I did in my career path was pick up and go to Cornell and try it at a bigger, more complex. And
It was very hard leaving SU because I was so comfortable and I adore the people at Syracuse years of history there. So,
Chris, what advice do you find yourself giving clients when it comes to getting the right people into the right leadership roles?
I think it boils down to trust and communication. So, you know, when I'm talking to an AVP who's building her or his team right underneath, it's finding the people that they can trust and starting with that relationship with, you know, overdoing communication, over communicate. And whenever possible, I mean, I know we're in a virtual post-COVID world and most all shops we're talking to have these hybrid schedules, but I try to get them to, you know, whenever possible, meet in person, look them in the eye so you can see them, feel the body language and build that trust. And that open communication is critical, I think, in when you're leading a team and building that team underneath you. I'm gonna jump back to Sue real quick. So the listeners know Matt Tremolin was the VP for advancement at Syracuse.
Yes,
left
he was.
To go to RPI, and he stole you and brought you over. Is that how we say it, or will Matt be mad at me?
That's one way we can frame it. I was fortunate enough that Matt and others at Syracuse took a huge chance on me, hiring me in 2016 as the VP of alumni engagement there. And so we had a great run for nearly 6.5 years, yeah. And then transitioned into employee engagement, yeah, there at Syracuse. And then Matt had an opportunity to go to RPI. And so he left and stole, recruited, whatever, however you want to
frame
it.
Right.
and I'm remote. And that's another part of my world. Although I'm in Albany about 2 to 3 times a month. So,
yeah,
and it works. So, and it works because there's trust. So,
and, you know, outside guy looking in, observing, that Syracuse had gone through several different iterations of alumni leadership.
Yeah.
And until you arrived and provided that stability and vision for the place, it was a constant churn there. There was never really any, you know, clear direction the program was going until you. Fast forward to 2016, wow, to the present, you actually turned that program into a really good, I mean, one that is looked at and, you know, others, and you're able to recruit a great leader into the role to take over after you moved into your, Lauren.
Yeah, Lauren. Fantastic. Yeah. Chris, thank you for that. You know, and I, you know, Matt, President Siverud, so many, our chair when I was hired, I mean, the investment at Syracuse allowed us to really build the alumni engagement, right, team there. And I look at that success, and thank you for that compliment. And Lauren is amazing. And that team is rock star level team. They, you know, they really hit their stride pre-pandemic and then kept it going. But I look at that success and I sit back and I think that's because I, without even knowing, I care deeply then about employee engagement, right? It becomes, yeah, natural to me. It's part of my strength set and what I do. And so I look at that as a great example of why we had success, because we focused on one another and we built a great culture within that team. Yeah. Kim Infante, shout out to Kim Infante.
Yeah. Another superstar there.
Superstar.
I had a chance to work with that team with Lauren for a little bit and have just come to find just one after another, rock stars in every spot.
They really, really are.
So leading an alumni shop for those years, and I think of it as like sort of, you heard it, 300,000 cats in that role. Does any of that learning apply to herding 65 and soon to be 100 maybe cats in your current role?
Yeah, absolutely. I like to say that, you know, my portfolio right now is our advancement division. That's the portfolio.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. I love it.
You know, I'm an advancement officer. I'm just engaging our own individuals and people. And I love to use that because I think it's true. But also when you step back and you really think about employee engagement per the definition of Gallup and what I mentioned earlier, you know, ongoing dialogue. Well, that's what alumni want, to remain in an engagement path and a community, right? They want to know their purpose. They want to see development. They want caring conversations. I mean, again, there's such a parallel track and so much synergy between the two that I do think in many ways, my background in alumni engagement and stewardship really lends itself to how to build the internal relationships to help people become the best version of themselves. And that's my goal. And that's my job. I say that during onboarding. My job is to help you be the best version so you're successful for RPI. Let's talk about how we can do that.
Love it.
And I love it. Like, I love the work that I get to do. I think I'm just a born coach, like as a college athlete. Like, it's just what I love to do.
Love it.
You're clearly an expert in your field and passionate about it. I think it's fantastic. We need more Sue Ballards out there across advancement teams. it's fair to say that not a lot of advancement shops are making the investment in your particular role. Would you say that is that a fair assessment? Is it changing? How would you sort of assess the field?
I think the pandemic came in and put a huge exclamation mark on all industries as far as people and values and decisions that people are going to make based on their own set of values. Meaning we saw tremendous turnover right after the pandemic, right? Because people were no longer going to sit aside and work in an environment or a culture that didn't align with their values, their core values. And so I think post-pandemic, there's been more of an emphasis on this work. And I can tell you, coming out of the talent management conference from Cage, was just like, you sit there and you're just blown away by the members of that organization and the work that they're doing. But, you know, Harvard is adding 2 more positions to their already talent managed scope under Brittany's leadership there. One specific to employee engagement, one specific to diversity, I believe. Don't quote me on that. And so they're certainly growing and expanding. I think it's the smaller shops, which smaller is relative, right? I came from Syracuse, so 180, give or take, pre-pandemic, to, you know, 60-ish and where we're going. I think it's sometimes our size shops that don't always have this type of representation within just the advancement division, which again allows me an amazing platform within our industry to talk about the importance of it, no matter the size of shop. And maybe you can't dedicate just a role to it, but how do you take someone who's really passionate and really good at this and add this into their own professional growth as an AVP? And I think it's very important that it is someone who sits at that senior leadership table. It has to come from the top. It has to, in order to be part of the culture.
So sort of as we kind of approach the end of our first half hour, Sue, I thought a good question to end on would be one I think everyone's thinking about, which is, what's the trick for retaining great advancement talent?
Yeah. So I wish we all had the answer to this magic question.
Yes.
Give it away for free. Wait a little bit.
Yeah. Charge for this.
You know, I don't have the perfect answer. Honestly, I think it's making sure a couple things. One, the ongoing dialogue component of employee engagement is really, really important with your manager. And if you're in a relationship with your manager where you feel supported and safe and valued, that person is going to be able to open up and talk about, I've had an opportunity and what does this look like and how does this compare to my career path here within our current organization, right? And that's the goal of ongoing dialogue, to ensure that it's not a surprise, to ensure that your top talent, it's just like a giving pyramid. We should be looking at our advancement shop as internal top talent. Who's your top 10% and what are we doing for them? What is their internal stewardship plan? What is their internal professional development plan? So we don't lose them. But if someone is speaking to them, how are we going to get ahead of that, right? And sometimes we can't always match with dollars. I mean, cash matters. Green is a good. And people look at that. They look at the cost of living and what their income looks like. And so when someone comes in from another organization who has a fantastic offer, I think that the other organization is going to be ahead of that offer if there's been the ongoing dialogue with the manager and that individual knows that they have the support and the care and the leadership from their current manager. That matters. And I think that helps with retention. And then overall, it's about the culture. We're very focused on Clifton Strengths at RPI. I just went through the certification for it. And so we're building a culture of strength-based work, which also lends itself to employee engagement. And if you're focused on strengths, the data shows you're going to be more productive and more engaged as well. And so I think those two things come hand in hand. Most importantly, it shouldn't be the first time that the manager's having a conversation with top talent when the top talent has an amazing offer. They should have been having the conversations earlier.
Yeah, that's crucial to not wait till the very end when someone's leaving or about to leave before you're actually having those meaningful conversations about growth and opportunity. Well, we're bumped up against the top of our live show. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We're going to take a short break and be back with Sue Ballard on our podcast edition of Alumless. But before we do, Chris, who are we featuring in a couple weeks?
How appropriate is this? I had forgotten it. I said this answer earlier, but it's Andrew Gosin, our man at Cornell. He's going to be joining us and talking all things digital engagement and digital fundraising. And he's a guru in this space. Probably the right word to use, but he is amazing, brilliant guy. And I think our listeners will love hearing from him.
So I thought that was totally planned out, that you were just foreshadowing the next episode from the moment we hit record on this one. That
it was accidental, but it's perfect.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, thanks to Max Layson and the great team at Protopia for being our presenting sponsor. And we're going to take that short break and be back with Sue Ballard on the podcast edition. But for everyone else, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Hey, listeners. Chris and I were going to record an ad discussing all the great aspects of Protopia, of which there are many, but instead, we thought it would be even better to hear from one of Protopia's current partners. Here's Sally Sistar, Executive Director of Alumni Engagement at Denison University, talking about her experience with the technology. If you like what you hear, be sure to go to protopia.co/alumlus and check it out. How do you see Protopia fitting into your plans? You mentioned a few ways that I might imagine it fitting in, but what do you think?
It's a tremendous fit. Listen, I cannot tell you how excited I was when I took this job to know that they already had Protopia, right? It's a very, very smart decision. Because one, it just, you know, it with the AI technology enabled, like it takes us out of the equation, right? It is really a great tool for alumni and students to ask those questions and be connected to, you know, the top experts, right? Or the top individuals to answer those questions for them. What I've been really excited to hear about here at Denison is, you know, if that question goes to five alumni, well, all five of our graduates are answering. And then it gets into, you know, like a train of communications between them and the individual asking the question. So it's really facilitating community for us in a way that we couldn't do that ourselves if we were at the helm of trying to, you know, facilitate someone's question going to those individuals, right? It's just, it's automatic, and that's the beauty of it. The other thing I would say to you is that it is also, it's bringing people into, it's engaging alumni that may not have engaged with us in any other way, right? But they really are appreciative that, you know, they get an opportunity to help another alumni member or help a student. So I can't say enough great things about what a difference maker that has been for us on the engagement level.
All right, we are back. Thank you so much for listening to Alumlus. This is the podcast edition. We are here with Sue Ballard from RPI. We had a great conversation in the live show, Sue. So thank you so much for those insights around employee engagement and organizational effectiveness. I thought, though, we could start the podcast edition, the second half hour here, by sharing a little bit about RPI. Listeners may not know what RPI is like, and maybe you can just kind of paint the picture for folks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, the last time I was on campus before I joined RPI, it was when I was a college swimmer at Hartwick. So going back to a private, smaller type institute felt like a little bit like a homecoming for me when I joined RPI. So founded in 1824. So we are in our bicentennial celebration right now, which is super exciting. Private institute really focused on five schools, with engineering being our largest. I never thought I would be in a polytechnic institute, but I have to say it's been really, really rewarding. Working with incredibly talented and wildly brilliant faculty members, as well as staff and our cabinet leadership, has been very rewarding. And our graduate body is around 6,200, 6,250, if you will, all in with graduate students. We're at 7,500. So smaller than where I've worked previously, but still very rewarding. And then last fun fact, and you might have seen this in the news, Super excited. We are the only university in the world to be housing an IBM partnership with the quantum computing system. We actually are celebrating our official groundbreaking in a couple weeks. We announced it at the end of, I think, last fiscal year, at the end of June. So this is incredibly exciting. A generous donation. Really, really great also for a recruitment perspective as we look ahead at the next 200 years for RPI and the Capital District and what's happening with Microchip and everything else of that nature. So yeah, that's a little bit about RPI.
Yeah, obviously
great school has some similarities to Lehigh, to be honest with you. Some of the same profile. Yeah, as you just described it, I'm like, that's Lehigh right there.
Yeah. My husband, just to digress for a second, went to a polytechnic institute. I'm married to an engineer, and he went to Michigan Tech. And so he actually was, we were at an event a couple weekends ago, and he's like, this is just like Michigan Tech. So similar demographics, similar model, similar makeup. So I am an engineer of people. I am not a scientific engineer.
My wife went to Virginia Tech, and she is also, I would say, a more people-minded person as opposed to a technical one. So that's one of the great parts about polytechnic institutions and how they've grown and add more sort of the liberal arts, right? And really complementing some of those more technical majors and degrees with opportunities in the humanities. But sort of, Chris, circling back to, you know, the idea of talent management and recruitment, you've been in a couple of big searches lately for some of our clients. That's part of what we do often is, our work sometimes is sort of interim leadership type of opportunities with different partners adding us as kind of the alumni leader for a period of time. And then kind of you help backfill that position and sort of circle off the team. But broadly speaking, can you share a little bit of what you've noticed about the candidate pools and, you know, some of the searches that you've been involved with?
First of all, let's make it clear. We do not do search. We don't do executive search. But yeah, because Ryan and I feel like we know everybody in this industry, we can help a lot of clients, point them in the right direction to find the needles that are in the haystack out there. But we do, like you said, I'm doing an interim role at Rollins. You have a couple teed up right now. Those should be starting pretty soon, where we're spending, you know, up to, for me, it was 8 days a month. I'm working, ending this month with Rollins, doing that kind of stuff. And we're trying to fill positions. And if we look at any one of our clients, Ryan, I'm here to agree, there's not a single client we have that's not looking for talent right now. There's every single one has a job opening and they're under some kind of search. This is in the alumni engagement space specifically now. Advancement, it's always happening, looking for talent. Coming out of the pandemic, it was slim pickings for a while. But what I'm just starting to see in the last 6 months, maybe over this course of this fiscal year, is that pools are getting bigger and better. And there's more talent that is surfacing now through the searches that I've been involved in. For a while there, it was like you put up a job up and you'd get four applicants and none of them were qualified. And we just did one for a client where there were 50 applicants, 12 needed a phone call. So we screened out, 80% of them, but 12 needed a phone call. We found six that were great, did a semifinal round, and found four that are coming to campus for an interview. And that's the kind of pools we're seeing now, much more talented, deeper, more diverse. And that's the good sign for us right now in hiring. So I hope you're seeing similar things at RPI, but that's what I've noticed industry-wide is that it seems like it's getting a little better and the pools are deeper. What would you describe?
I would agree. There's one lane I think that can often be a struggle as we look at industry trends and within annual giving. I think that that's oftentimes a hard in general statements, right, across the board from an industry perspective. And it aligns with the trends that we see within the industry, right? But overall, our pools, deep talent, rich talent, increased diversity, and very, very true. And Chris, to your point about you don't do recruiting, but you're helping your clients. You helped us at RPI. You shared our ABP alumni engagement.
I remember, right?
You were like, I'll share it for you. And Matt and I were like, please share it. And we have an amazing ABP, Megan Mortensen, that joined us a couple months ago.
For people out there, we don't even charge for this. So client or not, no. we will post your, Ryan and I will both post your positions. The higher up, the better, frankly. If it's an assistant director, doesn't get the kind of attention, but associate director and executive or EVP, it has 8,000 plus people that will see that post. So we're happy to help.
Yeah, thank you for that.
One of the byproducts of, you know, working with CMAQ, but we're happy to help all of our friends across the space. And one thing I've noticed is that I think it's still maybe difficult for schools that are more rural to recruit talent to move to those places for leadership roles. I'm thinking of a couple of examples in my head right now, but I wonder, Sue, how you are seeing the whole hybrid work environment now that we're a couple of years removed from COVID. What are you seeing as far as schools developing policy and or recruitment practices that require folks to be on site 5 days a week versus hybrid? I know you have a hybrid or remote role, but what are you seeing more broadly?
Yeah, so it's interesting in that at RPI, we just rolled out last summer a test hybrid program for the Institute. So while some universities were quick to roll it out or immediate post-pandemic or kind of on the tail end of the pandemic, if you will, RPI launched it under President Schmidt's leadership just this summer. And so for us, many people are in a hybrid 3 days in, 2 days offsite type model. And so, and we were one of the test cases, if you will, test divisions within RPI. Advancement's been working remotely long before the pandemic, right? Some of us are more willing to say that out loud, but it's, we travel, we're offsite, right? This is a part of who we are and how we operate. And so I think it was natural for us and we appreciated being selected for that. And so for us, it works well. And I am hybrid, as I mentioned earlier, there are 2 to 3 times a month. Interesting fact about me, and again, I'm brutally honest, I actually love to be in the office. Mm. At Syracuse, when we were going back to a rotating schedule, I chose to be in the office almost 5 days a week just because for me, like I'm extroverted. I'm sure that's hard to figure out. I love
human I'm introverted. People are often surprised by that. So,
I mean, it's very shocking. So, so for me, this has actually been a unique growth opportunity for me to find the balance on a hybrid schedule. And so, but it does set an example to have an AVP who's hybrid to say, this is part of our culture and this is okay. It's about productivity. And it's about making sure that you continue to keep that productivity at the clip that we're moving. And as long as that happens, that's okay. And not every job is created the same. Not every position is the same. An AVP of alumni engagement is a very different position than an AVP of employee engagement and operations. I'm more back of the house and a good piece of my role now. So, and then overall, Ryan, I think across the industry, I think as ebbs and flows, I really do. UVA, I mean, they have an amazing remote. I sat in one of their presentations last year and their retention and what they've been able to do. And it doesn't matter if you live 5 minutes from campus or if you live in another state, and their heat map of where people are employed because of their program and their, it's incredible. It is off the charts amazing. Other institutions, other universities have moved back towards much more in-house. And so I really do think it ebbs and flows. And I think some of that is also about leadership and what the leaders are comfortable with.
And in your case, though, it's a big part of it is the word I used earlier is trust. I mean, Matt brought you in because he 100% trusted you could do the work and do it remotely because you've had that relationship for all those years.
Yes. And I think, you know, thank you for saying that. I think I'm at a point where I would say, yes, Matt does trust me. I know that about our relationship.
I think it's a fair statement. I think it's fair.
Yeah, it's a very fair statement. And I think the people, sometimes we're afraid to add in the human element, meaning the personal element. I have a 5-year-old, well, almost 5-year-old.
You know, I'm already, I'm going to ask you.
I know. I mean, that little red-headed leprechaun is keeping us running. And so, Matt obviously knows that. And he knows that, like, right now our world and our priority, and I have no shame in saying this, is raising him and keeping him as stable as possible. And so I'm very fortunate and I have a leader like Matt who recognized that, was like, we can make this work. This will work. And it has. It really has. So
great to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to your point about UVA, I too have been very impressed by what they've done, the work from where you work best. And we're actually going to have Cindy Frederick on the show in the fall. And we're just picking out a date for Cindy to join us, which will be great to talk a little bit more about that. But I wanted to ask, you know, one of the articles I read, it was a long time ago now, it was a Fortune magazine article, and it said something like, as an individual, you leave 50% of your lifetime earning potential on the table if you do not switch organizations every 3 to 4 years. And that's a lot of income to leave on the table. And as managers and we're talking to employees and we want them to stay, of course, our high performers to stay. But if they'll almost certainly make, you know, more money, have more opportunity at another place, another advancement team, you know, how do you coach that dynamic? What do you say? Obviously, I'm sure you're honest about that. And you alluded to that in the first half hour. But what would you advise the professionals out there how they think about this?
Yeah, and this goes back to retention question, right? So much of this is about retention. But, you know, and even digging further beyond retention, right? The relationship that you have with that individual who's sitting in front of you, like if I'm the manager or the leader, I like to use leader better than manager. If I'm the leader sitting with that person and they're talking through this opportunity and it's going to double their pay, which happens. There are jumps like that in the industry, right? Where you go from an assistant director to an executive director type role. It can, right?
Yep.
You know, as much as you don't want to lose that human and that talent, and there's a way to work through that conversation, you also need to do what's right for that individual as a human being and as a leader. And this goes back to sometimes you're not going to be able to retain them all. But Ryan, to really be specific on what can you do, I think it's, you know, this might sound simple, but it's truly sitting down and being like, okay, let's talk about this opportunity. Let's talk about the culture. Let's talk about the research that you've done. Let's talk about the leadership. What is there? Because the grass might look greener, but it's not always greener for any place. Every place has hard days. Every place has learning curves. Every place has hardships and growth opportunities that we're working through, right? And so I think it's about that and talking through what is it about this position that interests you? Take the salary off the table. Without the salary, what is it about this position that you want to go do? And then from their answer, okay, how can we make that happen for you here? Because if that's what it's about, how do we grow that into you as a human being? How do we provide that avenue ahead with being very honest and saying, we're not gonna be able to match that money. We might be able to increase some, but we can't match. And so in some you win and some you lose. But in hindsight, if you lose the top talent and they're going off to be even more productive in their journey and their career 20 years down the road or 10 years down the road, when you're at a conference and things always circle back, it might not have been the worst case because you never know how things will play out 10 years down the road. So
could always come back, right?
Right. Exactly.
Well, one of the things we get asked a lot about is to take a look at organizational structure of any shop. Sometimes it's across advancement. Often it's alumni where alumni sits in the advancement operation. You know, if I were to simplify the pre-written question, it would come down to this. What's the right time to reorg? Is there one in your mind, or is there moments in evolutionary stages that you would point to? How do you think about reorg?
Oh, that's a great question. So where we are currently, I'll use my, you know, RPI as example. Matt had done a lot of the reorg early on, which I think was the right approach, considering that we were in an invest to grow model. We were going to more than double the size of the division. So getting it organized in a very clear, coherent manner where we could be widely transparent with the division to say, here are the four main channels, here are the four AVPs, here's what this is going to look like. And I think that was important to do early on and have Matt as the VP lead that, be able to talk about it. This is where we're headed and why. The why behind the change is really, really important, right? The transparency to the best of our ability. But then I think within specific departments, there might be a time where you have to allow that I'm going to use AVP to be hired, or assistant VP or an executive director come in. They have to learn, they have to know the landscape, and they have to get to know their current staff a little bit at times to really be able to figure out what that reorg may or may not look like within their organization that they're in charge of, their purview and their scope, right? So I think it's a balance. But I think early on, from a macro perspective for a division, especially one that's building and growing like ours, I think it was the right thing to do. And then at times, others take a little bit longer. You got to get that ABP in to allow them that leadership and growth opportunity too.
Another thing I've heard said around this topic is when you talk about an HR person once said, you make decisions based on the hats, not the heads.
Yeah.
Meaning it's the positions that you want, not the people in them.
Right.
Sometimes it's impossible to do that, though. You have to make a decision based on people. Give me your thoughts on that whole topic.
Yeah, I don't always agree with that statement.
Yeah. I was thinking about a couple of examples in my head where that probably wouldn't have been the right. It would be impossible.
Like on paper, totally. That's a fine statement. But in reality, like as an employee engagement person, when you're working with these humans and then you know where they're trying to go and how they're trying to grow their career and retention conversations at the same time, like that is a very difficult model to always follow beautifully and perfectly. You have to do what's best for the organization 100%. But if we're not doing right by our people that we're leading, then there's a misservice and misstep there as well, in my opinion. And so I think it's a balance, Chris. I really do. Which is why I think for specific departments, it's appropriate to allow that new leader to come in 90-day, 120-day assessment and then figure it out, right? I'll use Syracuse. I didn't figure out the model at Syracuse in the first month. It took, I think I was 6 months in before I said to Matt, this is what I want to do. Right. Yeah. And he's like, go do it. Wow. So, yeah.
There are other times though that where Ryan and I come upon an organization that had that structure, those decisions got made more leaning towards the head versus the hat.
Yeah.
And you arrive at the situation and you look at the structure and you go, if we were going to build this thing, we would not build that.
Right.
So that's another moment where you need to rethink it. And I think you're right. I like the way you put it in terms of balance. There's no, our classic consultant answer, Sue, is, well, it depends, right? It depends on a lot of factors, right?
It really does, right? Yeah. It depends.
Right? Yeah. So. We get paid to tell people it depends. We're coming up against your time. I want to make sure we respect your availability here. But technology, are there technology tools that you're using to help with employee engagement or retention or recruitment? What's out there that people should know about?
Yeah, this is a funny question for me because it's a running joke within our group of AVPs and Matt. I am the the one that's the hardest for a vendor to get through and sell.
I've been on that side with you, Sue. I know exactly what that's like.
You know that I hold a hard line sometimes.
You said to me flat out, I remember, so this was back in graduate days, right? You talked to Sue. She was expecting at the time. And she said, Chris, don't talk to me for the next 2 years. And then we'll talk about it. All right, fine.
Fair enough. Okay.
I think you always appreciated my direction.
I 100% did. I loved it. That's why you're on the show right now.
Thank you, Chris. No, I mean, so I would say from a technology perspective, I am not the person that's like going to use this vendor and this vendor and this vendor. Certainly there's recruiting firms, right? And different aspects of that, you know, like this is simple, but LinkedIn is an amazing platform for recruitment and what that looks like. And like going back to our earlier conversation, when you're connected to amazing people like Ryan and Chris, and they're like, hey, we'll reshare your position, which is amazing based on the net that you can cast, right? That alone is helpful. But I think within our organization, there's key communities. We have a talent management consortium that's amazing that meets monthly, the case group, the resources through case, you know, these are not tech specific, but it helps us in our community and do what we need to do. And then
what that group is again, so be clear so people can find it.
The Talent Management Consortium is a group of all talent managers, employee engagement folks, and it's led by an amazing woman, Angie Franco, and I can connect anyone to that group. Hit me up on LinkedIn, find my email. I can connect you. I've connected a lot of people and we meet monthly and we have our own Teams channel. Just last week, I was Teamsing about a vendor an outside consultant that I needed to bring in for some training for RPI. And so it's a really great group. But I would last plug Gallup, 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 and the Q12.
Yeah.
And that survey from an employee engagement perspective. That's key for your culture. It's key for your managers. It's key for the organization. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be launching it this year, if not early in fiscal year 25, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I think of those groups that you were describing, the consortium, is like a, you get best practice, you get data, you get tips and all that, but you also get therapy from those groups, right?
Oh, yeah. Because we all understand, right? So we all understand and relate. And that's like the case conference that we had. I mean, it's just super, it's rewarding. It's a great group of individuals and professionals, so.
Well, let's wrap things up with our Friday Cheers section. We always try to end our show on topics that may or may not be unrelated to advancement, but things that just have us thinking. Could be a book or a podcast, an article, could be anything. Sue, what's your Friday Cheers?
So I would love to say that I'm listening to this amazing podcast or I'm reading this really educational book, but the reality is that I work, I raise a child, and I'm also a wife. So my Friday Cheers is this amazing community that I've joined in Syracuse. It comes from Albany. It's a metabolic fitness gym. The founder actually graduated from Siena, Matt Phelps. They launched in 2012 and they have four or five gyms in Syracuse. I'm on my 1 year anniversary. And honestly, it is my Friday Cheers. It is everything to me right now as a college athlete to find this type of community. I just love it. So I don't have an amazing podcast or book to share unless you like Little Blue Truck, which is a great hit in our home right now.
Podcast. Share that one. That's a
Little Blue Truck series. In fact, my son was Little Blue Truck for Halloween when he was three. It's a huge children's series. It's amazing. Little Blue Truck and his good friend Toad.
I remember those days. Ours are 11. Our younger two are 11 and 13. So my book recommendation at that stage would have been Goodnight Moon because we went through.
Oh, I love Goodnight Moon.
We literally wore one out. Book with our son, we read it multiple times a day.
Yeah, I love it.
How my Friday Cheers is just you know, if you ever are planning on going to Disney, don't go in March is my Friday.
Chris,
it's spring break.
Chris
time
is still thinking about that.
Oh, it was brutal, but I tell you what, it's magical and all those things, but it's, if you're not up for crowds, don't go to Disney in March. So, and I'm not a big crowd guy, so it's a pretty, you know, not a very heady one at all this week, Ryan, but Disney is amazing. If you're going to go, get the Lightning Lane passes whenever you can and get out of there.
Yeah. It's definitely, I always found it just unbelievable that you could pay for a park pass and like then you have to stand in line for a 3 hours, even though you paid $150 or whatever it is for a pass.
Well, more
you
than that.
Pay for the Lightning Lane. Yeah, it's incredible. And you could, anyway, we could talk about Disney for a while, but. My Friday Cheers is a book that I've been reading. It's called Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. And it was a Pulitzer Prize winner in 2016. It was Oprah's book club nominee. And I've read a couple of his books lately, but it tracks a woman and her escape from a plantation and what happens along the way. And it's really an unbelievably well-written book that just you just feel yourself in that era. And it's just hard to believe the cruelty that people had towards not just Black folks as slaves, but other white folks who were helping slaves along the way escape towards their freedom. And it's not a particularly long book. It's like 300 pages. And but it's well worth your time to pick up Colson Whitehead's The Underground Railroad. So that's my Friday Cheers for today. But all right, well, we'll wrap things up. Thanks so much to Sue Ballard for joining us today. Right. Chris,
thank you. This was
always
a fun conversation. Really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate both of you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to the team at Protopia for sponsoring Alumless. And we'll see you back in 2 weeks with Andrew Gosen from Cornell. Bye, everybody.